You know what, while we're doing that quietly, let's go ahead and introduce our speaker, Mickey. Where are you? Oh, there you are, Mickey, come on up. Okay, let's give him a nice Visalia warm welcome.
Hi everybody, my name's Mickey Bush and I'm a fully conceited alcoholic. Probably an addict too. You guys have got some balls expecting me to compete with the seventh tradition can going around. You think I can compete with alcoholics being asked for their money? You must be joking. Alright, well, okay, I'm glad the big book's here, the big book. I love this big book. B-I-G-B-O-O-K. Believing in God beats our old knowledge. And that's what the big book means to me. So I'm glad to be here. I've had a smashing dinner. We just pigged out, had a great dinner. And had a nice easy drive up here and good friends. And I turned my cell phone off. Everybody turn their cell phone off? The only reason you're allowed to leave your cell phone on is if you're expecting a call from the local VD clinic. and they only call if you've got a positive test. So if your phone goes off, we sympathise, but you ain't getting laid tonight. You know, I'm glad to be here. I don't know that I've been here before. There was a lot of cow shit on the way up. Damn. You know about that stuff, huh? Yeah, put that in, bud. Yeah. But it was fun. I enjoyed driving up here. Nice car to drive in and plenty of time and, you know, relax and, you know, sober and just real glad to be around. I've got a busy week. I've got my granddaughter coming out from North Carolina. I've got a 4-year-old granddaughter and going to take her to see her dad, my son, who's in Folsom Prison, and he's never actually held his own daughter in 4 years. You know, she's like excited about that. She's a little pistol, 4 years old. My own daughter is coming out from Chicago. She's 16. 16 going on genius. If I want an argument at any time, all I have to do is tell her I know something that she don't know. You know what I'm talking about? Plenty of heads going there, yeah. So, you know, and I'm coming up on 28 years sober myself. And you know, I'm like having a little gratitude attack, you know. I keep having these gratitude attacks. Anybody know what I mean by gratitude attacks? You know where you come over all kind of ooky and just as if you're hugging your kid or something like that. You know? Gratitude. I never knew nothing about gratitude when I got here. When I got to Alcoholics Anonymous on January the 15th, 1983, I never knew nothing about gratitude. Gratitude? What was there to be grateful for Christ's sake? You know, gratitude? I never knew nothing. That wasn't even in my vocabulary, that gratitude. And yet the truth of the matter was, I've had something to be grateful for ever since I was christened. You know, think about it. My name's Mickey Bush. Mickey Bush. Mickey Bush. That puts me somewhere between a mouse and a president. Anywhere in that spectrum is where you're likely to find me. Perhaps it's not such a big gap with some of the presidents. Anyway, but I wouldn't say a thing like that. I wouldn't say a thing like that. Mickey Bush, and I am really grateful they never named me Harry. Can you imagine? imagine going through life with a name like Harry Bush. Yeah, you're a rotten lot, you lot, yeah. When my kids were being with, we weren't going to name no Harrys and no Roses. There weren't going to be no Rose Bush, you know, and no Harry Bush. So, but I don't know nothing about gratitude. I don't know nothing about nothing. You know, what do I know? I get to Alcoholics Anonymous. I'm so sick. I'm so sick when I get here. I'm so sick that I don't know I'm sick. Do you know how sick that is? Do you know how sick it is to be so sick that you don't know you're sick? We got a well-known celebrity right now in that field. You know, I was so sick I didn't know. And if you're as sick as I was when I got here, so sick that you come into a meeting full of alkies, like this one, good alky seems to me, and you scan the room and you think, well, I ain't as sick as him. Do you know how sick that is? Do you know how sick it is to be in a room full of alkies thinking you ain't as sick as the next guy? That's really sick. So if you're in here tonight wondering whether you is or whether you isn't a real alcoholic or not, I want you to know that I can relate to being as sick as you don't think you are. Really sick. Bill, are you going to get me some water that I asked for? No. Don't flesh it and turn it into wine. There's a dude who does that, you know. Anyway, I was so sick, I knew nothing about nothing when I got here. When I got to Alcoholics Anonymous, I knew nothing about nothing. I thought I knew everything about everything, but I actually knew nothing about nothing. You know, I never knew nothing about alcoholism, I never knew nothing about Alcoholics Anonymous, I never knew nothing about 12 steps. You know, I knew nothing about nothing when I got here, thinking I knew everything about everything. You know, I don't know about you, but when my butt's on a bar stool and I'm drinking for 5 or 6 hours, I know everything there is to know. Don't matter what you've done, where you've done it, who you've done it with, how many times you've done it, I've done it more and better. Don't matter what it is I know about. You want to know how the space shuttle blew up? I'll tell you. I know how to... I should have been on that space shuttle, you know. I only missed being on it by that much because I was busy at the time. I was busy drinking. Alcoholics are very busy drinking, you know. But I know nothing about nothing, thinking I know everything about everything, you know. And when I get to Alcoholics Anonymous, you know, on January the 15th, 1983, I knew nothing about nothing. I didn't know anything about being powerless. I didn't know nothing about being alcoholic. I didn't know anything about nothing when I got here. You know? Don't die on me. Yeah. You know? On January the 15th, 1983, something happened that I didn't know was happening at the time. It wasn't a consciousness that I had at the time. Everything I know about myself is all in retrospect. I didn't know nothing about it at the time. I hear people in meetings say why they did this and what they were doing and all that, and I say, did you know you were doing that? I mean, was you deliberately doing that to do what you were doing? They go, oh no. But it spews out of them as if, you know, it was some kind of common knowledge. But I never knew. I never knew nothing when I got here. I had no idea what was wrong with me or what to do about it. Now, one thing I'm very sure of is that there's a total difference between sober and sobriety. I hear people talk about sobriety all the time. Bill Wilson, the Big Book, and lots of literature talks about and references sobriety. But what they're really talking about is length of being sober. And there's a total difference between sober and sobriety. A total difference. I see a lot of people in Alcoholics Anonymous been sober a long time. Ain't got no sobriety. And yes, I'm a good judge. And why I say that is because I've been physically sober many, many times. Many, many times in my life I have been physically sober. Every time I got released from a joint, no matter what kind of joint it was, I was as physically sober as I stand before you right now. I tried to count my release dates once. I lost count long before the end. You know, I've been locked away in all kinds of, you know, institutions and stuff. Careful, don't let him bless it. You know, I've been in all kinds of institutions all my life. I've been in bloody places cuckoos wouldn't fly over, man. You know. But they never knew what was wrong with me. They didn't know what was wrong with me, and they didn't know what to do about it, even if they found out. They knew how to hurt me. They knew how to bash me up. They knew how to, you know, chain me to padded cells and shoot me up with tranks and zap me on electric machines and do all that. But they never knew what was wrong with me. Are there any weird people here tonight? And the rest of you lying mothers, I know weirdos when I see them. I mean, all my life people have said, "What is wrong with you? The hell's wrong with you? For Christ's sake, what's wrong with you?" And they would ask me what's wrong with me as if I knew. What is wrong with you? Goddamn weird you are, weirdo. Get out of the way from me, weirdo. Hell's wrong with you? And I wouldn't know what they were talking about. I mean, you know, they'd ask me what was wrong with me as if I could give them an answer. I found out, oh, actually I've got a twofold disease. It's an obsession of the mind, allergy of the body, can't control my drinking. I don't know what's wrong with me, what's wrong with you? Why do you drink like you do? Why don't you drink like I do? Because I don't know. I have no idea. I don't know what the hell they're talking about. So they keep locking me up and I keep getting put away and, you know, and I get released and I'm as physically sober as I stand before you right now. No sobriety. No beautiful big book. No design for living, blueprint for life. No 12 steps. No sponsor. No sponsees. No meetings. No nothing. So what do? I go back and do what I know what to do. I mean, that's what I do. I just continually go back over and over and over. And I'll tell you how serious that is. In 1966, I got released from a maximum security prison as physically clean and sober as I stand before you right now. Within 6 weeks, 6 weeks later, I come out of a blackout in chains in front of a judge, and I'm on a murder charge, and I've killed a man, and I don't know what I've done. That's where alcohol takes me. I don't go out drinking and have little slippy poos. You know, I go out drinking and come out of blackouts in chains in front of judges on murder charges. That's where alcohol takes me. Any other blackout drinkers here? No shit. I never knew what a blackout was. I never knew. Guy told me, he said, "You was in a blackout." I said, "No, I wasn't." Didn't know what it was, but denied it anyway, just in case. "Yeah, we call that a blackout." I said, "No, I was awake, I was doing shit." He said, I said, "Blackout, idiot, not pass out." I didn't know you did shit in a blackout. Shit you didn't remember. Like travel. I came out of a blackout once walking down the street in Spain. I went out drinking in London. You know something's happened when you come out of a blackout, it's all lovely sunny palm trees. Ain't no sunshine and palm trees in foggy, wet, rainy London. And I'm walking down the street with an Eskimo chick. I don't know where she came from. We can all find them ourselves, don't we? Are there any miracle drinkers here? No miracle drinkers? This is a disease of denial, you know. D E I-A-N-I-A-L. Don't even notice I am lying. No miracle drinkers. Nobody ever go out drinking and have a miracle develop in front of their very eyes. Nobody ever go out drinking and drink somebody good looking. Some old wretch turns into the delight of your life. Well, certainly for the night anyway. Some days you wake up next to it, don't you? I woke up next to it this time. I went, get out. She said, you get out, this is my house. Kick my arse out. I don't know nothing about that. I'm doing that all my life. I've been doing that all my life. Blacking out. I thought I was just a social drinker. Any other social drinkers here? Couple of Al-Anons around? Got Al-Anons, yeah. Al-Anons have got our beautiful, wonderful program, and they can drink. That's good shit, isn't it? But I thought I was a social drinker. I mean, I was a social drinker. Any social drinkers here, did I ask? Yeah, one or two, like. I mean, I knew I was a social drinker because every time somebody said, I'm going for a drink, I said, socialise. Any social drinkers here now? Oh, yeah, denial. See, but I don't know none of this. I don't know none of this. I'm from Northwest London. You probably picked up on that, right? This is the way I speak. Alcohol didn't do this to me. You know. Everybody drinks. I don't know no one who don't drink. Everybody drinks. Where I come from, I didn't know anybody who didn't drink. We always drank the drug alcohol. I mean, I never ever did it. I don't know anybody who didn't drink. I don't know why we drank. Nobody ever asked why we drank. We just drank. We never had a reason to drink, never had a reason not to drink. We just drank. We drank if the team won, we drank if the team lost. If it was a tie, we drank till there was a result. We just drank. Don't know why, have no idea why. I come in here, all you folk knew why you did it. I've heard it here tonight, I've heard folk talk about why they drank. I've heard people say, for example, they drank because they were covering up who they were, and they drank because they couldn't stand the pain, and they drank because they had all these issues. You know, I passed the tissues, I've got issues. You know. I think, at what stage of the game do you discover that? I can't even imagine that, me. I cannot imagine going into any pub I ever drank at and saying to the bartender, oh, bartender, hit me with a triple shot of your best booze. Because I can't stand who I am and I want to cover up the pain tonight. Never happened. Never happened. Oh, Mr. Dealer Man, give me an extra rock of crack cocaine because I really feel inadequate. Never happened. You know? You guys all say that. I don't know nothing about that. I'm like, what the hell's that all about? I've no idea. I have no idea what's going on here when I get here. You know, I don't know I'm alcoholic. You know, I've got three sisters and a brother. They're not alcoholic. My three sisters and brother ain't alcoholic. I'm alcoholic. I'm alcoholic, my three sisters and brother ain't alcoholic. They don't know why I drink. I don't know why they don't. I ask them, why don't you drink? They say, I don't like it. I say, what? What don't you like? They say, well, if I have one too many, I feel sick. I say, sick? You've got to drink past that. Who stops at sick? I don't stop at sick. I puke, but I don't stop drinking. Oh, that's handy. Made room for some more. They don't laugh, they think I'm weird. You know? My three sisters and brother got two kids apiece. I've got two kids. You know? I ain't never been married, I ain't never had a wife, you know, of my own. But I got two kids. Yeah, I got two kids, and I'm alcoholic, my kids ain't. My three sisters and brother ain't alcoholic, their kids are. See, that's what we're dealing with here, this disease of alcoholism. And lots of people like to say, oh, it's in the genes. They don't even know what a bloody gene is. I was born an alcoholic. Well, I'm glad I don't claim I'm born an alcoholic. People who are born alcoholic, they can blame people. They can be a victim. It ain't their fault. Some guy said he was born alcoholic. I said, do you think alcoholism's got anything to do with drinking? Yes, he said. I said, well, where did you do yours then? If you were born an alcoholic, where'd you do your drinking? Oh, I said, I don't know, you're bloody weird, you are. But, I mean, he says this stuff and people spew it out. Oh, I can't be bothered with some of that crap. Anyway, you know, I don't know when I get here, and I don't know my three sisters and brother ain't alcoholic. They don't know why I drink. I don't know why they don't. They don't like it. It don't do for them what it does for me, see? You know, so I can't claim that, you know, to be any different, same blood, same family, same environment, same everything. I am, they ain't. I got a good friend in the fellowship whose twin, identical twin, ain't an alcoholic addict. He is. So we ain't got to worry about all that crap. We just got to find out what it is about us. And I found out on January the 15th, 1983, what it was about me that made me alcoholic. And guess what? What it was about me that made me alcoholic wasn't what I did because I was alcoholic. Why I identify as a fully conceded alcoholic? Because it's the first step in recovery. There's two first steps in the program of Alcoholics Anonymous. There's the first step in recovery, it's on page 33, and there's the first of the 12 steps, which is a totally different step, though often confused. Well-meaning people often confuse the two first steps. I've seen it over and over and over again. I've seen them plant in the head of a newcomer misinformation about the first step. I heard here a guy walking in said that you do a first step as soon as you walk through the door and raise your hand as an alcoholic, you've done the first step. It's not true. It's not true. And it sets up a relapse. Because it ain't our message. The first step in recovery is to learn to fully concede to your innermost self that you're alcoholic. This is the first step in recovery. That the illusion that we are like other people or presently maybe has to be smashed. Nobody's talking about that. Too busy talking about smashing the ego that ain't even mentioned. See? So we got to learn what it is. And I didn't know what it was about me that made me alcoholic. I learned, you know, the things I did because I was alcoholic. You know, not being able to control my drinking. Once too many and a thousand ain't enough. Once I start, I can't stop. I can't stop from starving. And once I'm starving, I can't stop. All that's true if you're alcoholic. But that's not what makes me alcoholic. That's not what it is about me that differentiates me from the non-alcoholic. You see? And a lot of people don't know that. How do I know? How do I know that a lot of you don't know what I'm talking about? Because I ask. That's why. I ask folk all the time. All my troops, that's what I teach them when they come in. What is it about you that makes you alcoholic? They don't know. They can say they is one. They can admit to being alcoholic. They can tell that you're what they do because they're alcoholic. But ask them what it is about them that makes them alcoholic, they don't know. They think I've got two heads. See, because there's a total difference. A lot of people don't know. I won't leave you hanging because I'll tell you. And when I tell you what I tell you, every one of you would have said, oh, I knew that, I would have said that. When I got to that meeting at Alcoholics Anonymous in West Hollywood on January the 15th, 1983, guy got up in my face, and contrary to what a lot of people think, the book don't say we don't tell folk they're alcoholic, he says we prefer not to, but when Bill and Bob were doing the third man on the bed, they told him, you are an alcoholic. You know, he said, I didn't think much of that, I figured it was just a drunk. They said, no, you're alcoholic, something different. That's what you guys did with me. On January the 15th, two guys talking to me, one of them got up in my face, said, you're alcoholic. I said, what? He said, you're alcoholic. I said, that's a bloody mean thing to say to somebody then. You say a thing like that to a dude. You're alcoholic. I said, why did you say that? He said, because if it looks like a duck and walks like a duck and sounds like a duck and smells like a duck, it's a bloody duck. Just because he's been taking some shit and thinks he's an eagle, no, you're a duck. You're a duck, I'm a duck. Quack, quack, he went on. Yeah. Yeah. What is this? This is the bloody funny farm, man. You know, guys loving on you and shit, and ducks and eagles and shit. What's all that? But what he was doing was laying the foundation for me to understand what it was about me that made me alcoholic. And what it was about me that made me alcoholic wasn't what I did because I was alcoholic. Wasn't alcoholic addictive behavior. That wasn't what made me alcoholic. That's what I did because I was alcoholic, but that wasn't what it was that made me alcoholic. There's something specific to all of us. And it's not me, it's not you, it's not just opinion, it's not take that you can leave and use the rest. No, it's paramount to all of us if you'd be alcoholic. See, the duck and the eagle story, later on, was the best explanation he could have given me. What it was about me that made me alcoholic. See, I've got two parrots in one of my houses down in San Fernando Valley. A blue one and a green one. Bill and Bob is their name. And I've trained them to speak. You can stare very quietly by the cage and they'll screech out at you like parrots do. I'm an alcoholic! Powerless! Powerless! They're bloody parrots is what they are, but they can say they're alcoholic and powerless. And I didn't want to be a parrot walking around here talking out the side of my neck claiming shit I didn't know. So I learned and I asked, what is it about me that makes me alcoholic? And the duck and the eagle story set the pattern for that. See, what it was about me that made me alcoholic wasn't what I did because I was alcoholic. What it is about us that makes us alcoholic, that differentiates us from the normal person, is something that we think happens for them, but it don't. See, alcohol reacts different to the alcoholic than it does to the normal person. I have an abnormal reaction to alcohol. Normal people, my three sisters and brother, don't have this reaction. They may get drunk, they may be allergic to alcohol, they may even have a blackout, but it doesn't do for them what it does for me. And what it does for me is change my perception of reality. Now every one of you knew that. Alcohol changes me from a duck to an eagle. I go out drinking as a delicate little duck, have a few stiff ones and turn into an eagle and go swooping around looking for prey. It changes my perception of reality. I call it a nerd remover. Alcohol removes the nerdness. I feel like a nerd, I drink and I don't feel like a nerd. I feel like a nerd and I drink and I don't care if I'm a nerd. I feel like a nerd and I drink and you're a goddamn nerd. Screw you. Alcohol changes my perception of reality. Mary in my own group down there in Santa Monica, she's a badass drunk, is Mary. Delicate little dudette, but a badass drunk. She puts it as well as I've ever heard anybody put it. She says that when she drinks, she feels wittier, prettier, and tittier. And I know exactly what she means. Alcohol changes my perception of reality. In the doctor's opinion, in the beautiful book, the doctor says men and women drink primarily because they like the effect produced by alcohol. What's the effect produced by alcohol? Alcohol changes my perception of reality. Why do I prefer that? Because I can't stand reality. I don't like reality. I hate reality. I don't want nothing to do with reality. I can't stand this rotten world with you rotten people doing rotten shit. And when I drink, I don't have to put up with that because it's the buffer between me and you and everything else that I hate. And when I drink, it changes my perception of reality. I hate reality. That's why I wrote the word sober. S-O-B-E-R. Son of a bitch. Everything's real. I don't know what you brought to recovery, but what I brought here on January the 15th, 1983, was a lot of hurt and hate. Hurt and hate. That's what I brought to recovery. Hurt. I was full of hurt and hate. I hurt and I hate everything. I hate women. I can't stand women. I hate homos and queers and anybody different. I hate black people. I'm totally racist and prejudiced. I'm from London, England, living in Los Angeles, and I hate foreigners. I can't stand men. I hate you, and get away from me, and don't come near me. And with all that torment and turmoil going on inside, I still have to try and present to you a picture of somebody you will like. Because when your higher power's what people think of you, if you don't like me, I'm screwed. And I've got this false, phony facade that I'm presenting to the world. And it's, guess what? On January the 15th, what was different about January the 15th, 1983, than all the other days that I'd come out of blackouts? I'd been on a three-day run. I told you I'd been sober many, many times prior to the January the 15th. But on January the 15th, 1983, something happened that I didn't know was happening at the time. It wasn't a consciousness that I knew about. And when I got to Alcoholics Anonymous, I never came here with the only requirement for membership. I never came here with any desire to quit drinking. I knew nothing about nothing. But on January the 15th, 1983, what happened was, I hit bottom. I hit bottom on January the 15th, 1983. January the 15th, 1983 wasn't the worst time of my life. I'd been in lots of worse situations, spiritually, financially, mentally, every kind of which way you like. I'd been many, many times worse off than January the 15th, 1983. But I hit bottom. And guess what, folks? Guess what? Hitting bottom's not mentioned in the program of Alcoholics Anonymous. That's why many of us are confused about it. A lot of people think they know about hitting bottom, but they don't. In fact, in our meetings, we say shit like, everybody's bottom's different. Hear it all the time. I call it lip-flapping party line bullshit. There's no unity in being different. But people who don't know say that crap. See, our bottoms better be the same if we understand, but we don't understand, a lot of us. We think we do. See, hitting bottom, that's not mentioned in the program of Alcoholics Anonymous. H-I-T-B-O-T-T-O-M. Hurting inside, totally burnt out, turned to our master. See, and that's the same for all of us, not different. I know we say things a bit different, but what we're really doing when we talk about hitting bottom, most of us, are talking about the outside circumstances and conditions our life are in at the tail end of our drinking. And that's not what hitting bottom is. We think, believe and say it is, but it's not. The outside circumstances and conditions of our life is not what hitting bottom is, though we think that is. I hear it all the time. All the time I hear it. That's why I ask all the time about hitting bottom. I don't hear that in meetings. I don't hear sponsors say that I held a newcomer group and I went through their hitting bottom situation with them. I don't hear newcomers say my sponsor walked me through hitting bottom. But Bill in the 12 and 12, though he didn't mention anything about it in the program of Alcoholics Anonymous, more was revealed to Bill at the same time as it is promised to us. And in the 12 and 12, in the very first step, he says, why all this insistence that every alcoholic must hit bottom first? Now that's some ballsy crap to say to a bunch of drunks, isn't it? Drunks who don't like authoritative figures and being told what to do. Yeah, well, hit bottom on this, Father Mucker. But he insisted that every alcoholic must hit bottom first. Because hitting bottom is the process that brings us back to the power we've abandoned to ask for help. And I didn't even know I'd abandoned the power. At some point or other, you'll relate to this, I know, because you're here. That's why I know. But I ask people all the time, I asked a couple just recently about their bottom. Decent couple, like being sober, active. I said to the little chickadee, I said, you know, it's very important that we understand hitting bottom. Have you hit bottom? Yes, I've hit bottom. I said, tell me about it. She said, well, I was feet to the curb, hustling the Broadway, prostituting myself, trying to earn a dollar so I could get loaded. I said, that wasn't your bottom, love. She said, well, I think it was. I said, I don't give a shit what you think. I said to her, dude, what was your bottom, pal? He said, it's easy. He said, I was locked up in a penitentiary, married to Bubba. I said, that wasn't your bottom. He said, it felt like it was. You got bad minds, I can tell. You got bad minds. See, hitting bottom isn't about the outside circumstances and conditions our life are in at the tail end of our drinking. And the danger of believing that that is detox, destitution, family gone, kids gone, money, locked up, disease, all that stuff. The danger of believing that that's the bottom is that as that stuff gets better and improves, we falsely believe we've gotten better and improved and drink again. See it every day. Hitting bottom isn't about the outside circumstances and conditions of our life. Hitting bottom's an inside job, not an outside circumstance. And that's the same for all of us, and you'll relate as soon as I say what I'm about to say. On January the 15th, 1983, without knowing what I was saying and who I was saying it to or what the results of what I was saying was going to be, in desperation and despair, and the book talks about the gift of desperation, G-O-D, I can remember as clear as crystal, hurting so bad. I can remember going, help me, please, what's wrong with me? What am I going to do? And ask for help from outside of myself. ASK, Ask Saving Kit. Help, H-E-L-P, his ever-loving presence. And although I had abandoned him, he hadn't abandoned me. And when I turned back to him and asked for help, he seemed to be looking over my shoulder and he seemed to say to me, Mick, you silly bastard, I've been waiting for you to ask. Now get yourself over that cross-step fellowship. Sent me to you. I asked for help and he sent me to you. I didn't know that's what powerless was. I kept asking folk, what does it mean, powerless over alcohol? What does powerless over alcohol mean? They didn't know, but they spewed out all the lip-flapping party line bullshit that you hear in meetings. Can't control my drinking. To control it, you've got to be doing it, and if you're doing it, you're already screwed. You know, one's too many and a thousand ain't enough. Once I start, I can't stop. If I put a drink in my body of any kind, and all the other crap, that's all a consequence and a result of being powerless, but not what powerless is. But think about it. The very word gives you a clue. Powerless. It's not too difficult, is it? Powerless. We read it out tonight. What does the book say about power? Since there's one who has all power, that one is God, may you find him now. Does it say that or not?
Yes.
Does it say that or not?
Yes.
Well, guess what? Cunning, baffling, and powerful. Well, does that mean that God's got all the power except the power that the disease has got? That didn't jive. But of course it didn't mean that. The disease, the cunning, baffling and powerful disease that I'm in the grips of and under the spell of and in and of myself, I'm helpless, hopeless and powerless to resist its demands and have to do what it wants me to do, which is drink. And I'm powerless because the disease is so powerful it's gotten me to abandon God and spirituality so that along the path of life, sometimes quickly and sometimes slowly, the disease becomes all powerful in my life, dictating and dominating everything I say, do, think and feel. And I have no counteracting power to counteract the negative power of the disease. That's why it's so important to hit bottom and turn back to the power I've abandoned and ask for help. And then he comes back in my life and sends me to you. Here's a 12-step spiritual fellowship. You guys introduced me to a big book, B-I-G-B-O-O-K, Believing in God Beats Our Old Knowledge. In the beautiful book was a program, P-R-O-G-R-A-M, People Relying on God Relaying a Message. Holy shit. Message. M-E-S-S-A-G-E. Me, step, sponsor on God every day.
Right.
Holy shit, what's that? The steps, S-T-E-P-S, solution to every problem sober. Wow. Where do I get that? It's a gift. G-I-F-T, God is forever there. Oh, liar. Wow. What's he there for? To help. H-E-L-P, his ever-loving presence. Wow. Well, how do I find out about that? Get a sponsor. Sponsor? What do you mean, sponsor? S-P-O-N-S-O-R. Sober person offering newcomer suggestions on recovery. Holy shit. What do you mean, newcomer? Newcomer. N-E-W-C-O-M-E-R. Nothing else worked. Completely out of manageability. Enter recovery. That's what a newcomer is. Holy shit. Powerless? Why would I walk around here claiming I'm powerless? I hear it all the time. Powerless, powerless, everybody's powerless. Poor little powerless. Powerless, powerless, powerless. I'm powerless over people, places, and things. Powerless, powerless, powerless. Why would I do that? To me, that's the disease getting me to deny the power that's in my life. Why would I do that? In and of myself, I was helpless, hopeless, and powerless, but I'm not in and of myself anymore. I was, but I ain't. That's why the first step is written that way. We admitted we were powerless, but my life had become unmanageable. Not that I am powerless and it is unmanageable. I was powerless, but I turned back to the God I didn't know I'd abandoned and asked for help. He came back in my life, sent me to you. I got a program, a design for living, a sponsor, sponsors. I got so much power over alcohol today, I don't know what to do with it, for Christ's sake. I said to my sponsor, what should I do with all this power over alcohol? He said, give it away. Go up there and buy Sally and give it to them. Don't worry, they won't want it. I just said to a guy down in the Valley Club in San Fernando Valley, 38 years this lip flapper. 38 years. Goes around telling people, I'm as powerless today as the day I walked into Alcoholics Anonymous. I said, you're 38 years sober. That's right, he said, powerless. I said, why would you say that? Because I'm powerless. Powerless today. I went, you're 38 years sober. And I said, okay, what do you do about it? He said, I pray to God. I said, what? He said, I pray to God. God of my understanding. I said, you were powerless. That's right. He said, powerless over alcohol. I asked you what you did about it. You said, you prayed to God of your understanding. That's right. God of my understanding. I said, well, make your mind up. He said, what do you mean? I said, well, if you're powerless, you ain't got a God to pray to. And if you got a God to pray to, you ain't powerless. You can't have it both ways. You know what he said? Well, we all know you're weird. I said, I may be weird, but I ain't weird enough to listen to your crap. Spewing out jive-ass shit that you don't even know about. 38 years sober. It's not how to win friends and influence people, but... You know, I didn't know that powerless... I didn't know that years before I got here, this disease had already been working on me long before I got to Alcoholics Anonymous. You know... I thought of something just fairly recently, and I had to laugh when I thought of this, because I was raised a Catholic by a member of the CIA, you know, Catholic Irish alcoholic. And, you know, I'm not a Catholic basher, I don't want you to believe that. My beautiful book says, you know, AA has made me a better Catholic. Well, I didn't like it, and I didn't like it a lot, and, you know, I was scared, and then, you know, just a little kid, and they made you do shit, and they made me go to confession. In the big church, they had a big church, and, you know, my dad was Irish, and he was a member of the community, and, oh, yeah, and he used to be brutal, and, you know, used to make me go to confession, and I went into the confession, I hated it, I was really scared, the little cubby hole is dark, and, you know, there's some faggot behind the curtain, you know. And I was there, and I was scared, and I thought, oh, I'm going to get back at these, and so I took a dump in the confessional. Took a dump in the confessional. Come Sunday, the parish priest wasn't so bloody parish on that priest, I'll tell you. Right? You know, I mean, he was revered, the parish priest. He was standing at the pulpit going, oh shit, in the confessional. The whole parish was going, oh my God, perhaps the parish priest. Except me, sneaky little bastard, laughing up my sleeve. The next week I went in the other side, went prepared, left a note. Said, the phantom shitter strikes again. I don't know, I just remembered that. But, you know, the disease was already getting me to distance myself from the religion and the spirituality and everything else, you see, so that it could become... Now, I never said to myself, self, why don't you screw up so that you can end up in Alcoholics Anonymous, broke, busted, disgusted, and not to be trusted. I never said that, but it happened just the same. You know, today I do know. See, my name's Mickey Bush. I'm an alcoholic. I'm in an Alcoholics Anonymous meeting. I know what's wrong with me, and I know what to do about it. That's a lot of shit right there. And I never knew that when I got here. And I ain't drank for 28 years. You know, I love being a small part of a great whole. I love being a small part of a great whole. This great whole that we talk about in Alcoholics Anonymous. I hope you do too, because we all are. I know I get a lot of juice and I get a lot of rah-rah and I get a lot of, you know, far more than I'm entitled to, I guess. I was just told that I was a celebrity in Alcoholics Anonymous. I went to the old home group, a couple of well-known actresses, Academy Award-winning actresses, as you all know by name, been members of the group a long time and hadn't been there in a while, and they come out and they said, "Hi, Mick, I haven't seen you in a while." I said, "Yeah, I live in Santa Monica now, I don't live over here. Thought I'd come and visit the old home group." One of them said, "You know what, Mick, didn't realise what a celebrity you've become in Alcoholics Anonymous." I said, "What the hell are you talking about?" She said, "Well," she said, "everybody knows you, you talk all over." She said, "In fact, I'm making a movie in New York." She said, "And in New York I went to two meetings, and in both the meetings they quoted you and mentioned you by name. You're like this 12-step celebrity." I said, "Yeah, bloody big deal, a celebrity in an anonymous program." She said, "No, you're a celebrity, I'm just a clean and sober member, you know." But we say weird shit, don't we? And so, you know, here I am, and you know, I don't know what I'm doing, but you know what? I'm active. I was taught how to be active. I was taught by you guys that went before me. So I have such a tremendous respect for the folks who left their footprints for me to follow in. I didn't know I was being taught shit in Alcoholics Anonymous. How would I know? You know, I'm just a rebel, really, refuting everything. But I haven't been around very long, and a guy said, snapped me up one day and went, "Come on, mate," he said, "we'll go to the Tuesday night meeting." Oh, I said, "Okay." Go to the meeting, he says, "I think we'll wash the cups at the meeting." I said, "Wash the cups? It's 200 cups. He says, "Yeah, they need washing first, so wash the cups." I said, "I don't want to wash the cups." He said, "We'll go and get drunk." I said, "I don't want to get drunk." "So we'll come and wash the cups." I said, "Shit." An hour after the meeting, I'm washing 200 hairy-ass mugs. They weren't nice, delicate little cups. They were these big-ass mugs. During the week, he said, "Don't forget, we go Tuesday night, wash the cups." I said, "We washed the cups last week." He said, "Well, they'll need washing again. If they let us, we'll wash them again." I said, "I don't even wash my own cups." He said, "Well, go and get drunk." I said, "I don't want to get drunk." He said, "Well, come and wash the cups." It's standing at the goddamn sink like a nerd. Like a bloody nerd washing cups. 4 months I'm at the bloody sink washing 200 Ariel's cups. You know, after the meeting. Takes an hour after the meeting like a nerd washing cups. One day I'm standing at the sink and a guy comes and stands right there by the end of the sink. I said, what do you want? He said, sponsor said I've got to wash the cups. I said, what cups? He said, I guess them cups. I said, piss off and get your own cups. You ain't having my cups. He said, my cups. How do we know that? How do we learn? Well, we're learning by what, you know, this stuff. I don't know. I ain't drunk and I ain't going to jail and I ain't bashing nobody up and, you know, I'm like struggling through and I get commitments and I do the commitments and, you know, gradually, you know, we get sober. I love that. You know, I got to tell some stories about when I first got sober as well, because I never drank from the very first day that I got here. But I got a hearing problem. I don't hear shit right. You know, I've never heard shit right all my life. You know, people said, like, what is wrong with that guy? Even when I was a little kid, when I was just a little kid, people said, what's wrong with that kid? There's something wrong with that kid. He don't hear shit right. And I don't know, I'm a little kid. But they tell me I've got a hearing problem, I don't hear shit right. I didn't know it till I was here, that even as a little kid, I was already changing my perception of reality. Now, I wasn't drinking and drugging then, but what would happen was, it was so terrifying and painful where I came from, and it was so devastating that as a little kid, and if you've got kids, think about this, kids develop survival techniques. So, as a little kid, you know, my survival technique, I don't know this, I'm not consciously doing this, but as my survival technique was that folks would say shit, and I wouldn't like it, couldn't stand it, it was too painful, so I would mentally change it to what I did like, and then blame you for telling me. And I said, there's something wrong with that kid, lock him up, put him away, lock him up in a home somewhere. So I'd get locked away and put away and bashed up and hurt and all that, and that's how it went on. People thought I was mental, I'd been incarcerated in nut wards for the criminally insane and all that kind of stuff. They didn't know. But later on, that's what alcohol did for me. Alcohol did for me what I was doing as a little kid, and I got a hearing problem. And you know, it affects you in different ways. When I got here, you know, they one of them monsters that you eventually meet around here, you know, them monster sponsors, you know. He said, get a job. I said, what? He said, get a job. I said, what do you mean? He said, go to work. I went, well, I don't know how I'd get there. He said, get a bus. Well, I felt foolish because I didn't do a bus. I've never done a bus. I don't know how to ride buses. I've never ridden a bus. I'm smart, but I don't know how to get a bus. I'm living up above Sunset in West Hollywood. I thought, I've got to be able to get a bus. I walked out of Sunset and buses are going up and down the boulevard. They're full up with people. I thought, I've got to get a bus. And I'll practice, I'll rehearse getting a bus. So I stood at a stop and a bus came along and I hopped on the bus. And the guy said, put some money in the trap. Oh, yeah, put some money in the trap. Stood there and waited for something to happen. And the bus pulled away. And I went flying down the bus. I fell up against this chick with these big ones. She said, move your hands. Well, I don't hear shit right away. Sure, sure. Scream, scream. It's not my fault. I don't hear shit right. They threw me off the bus. You know? So I never heard when I got to Alcoholics Anonymous that it had to include all my mood-altering chemicals that affect you from the neck up. Now, I know this is Alcoholics Anonymous, and I know we're talking about alcohol and alcoholism, but it has to include all my mood-altering chemicals that affect you from the neck up. And if you're an alcoholic in Alcoholics Anonymous, you know, I'm telling you now, you can get no sobriety taking a mind mood altering chemical of any kind. Doesn't matter what you think. And I'm not talking about people's legitimate meds, that's not what I'm talking about. But when I get here, alcoholics anonymous, didn't drink. Didn't worry me one little bit. Carried on smoking pot. I like smoking pot. Anybody here smoke a little pot? Anybody smoke a lot?
Yeah,
no kidding. Ain't got nothing wrong with pot. I like pot. Pot only does two things to me. Makes me horny. Makes me hungry. Hungry and horny. Nothing wrong with that. Except some mornings you wake up with a sore arm and a bed full of pizza crust. They're pasta. Nothing wrong with that. I like speed, crystal crank. Anybody here do a little speed, crystal crank? Anybody do a lot? Yeah, no shit. Did it make your dick disappear too? You won't read that in no Betty Ford manual. Oh yeah, fire up some crystal, your dick will disappear. No, they don't tell you that. Funny how all the ladies are laughing at that. The dudes are all going, not me, rock on, Tommy, you know. Ladies are going, yeah, sure, pal, yeah. I like cocaine. Anybody here do a little coke? Anybody do a lot? Yeah, and I'd do anything for coke, me. Except pay for it. Don't like paying for it. You know. I like shooting smack. I like smack. I like heroin. You know, I'm a puker, so I don't care if I puke on you. I'm a puker, you know. But I had to learn to leave all that shit alone, and I never heard that I shouldn't do it. The guy who started Cocaine Anonymous, my good friend, was with him one day, wrote the first step of Cocaine Anonymous, and he changed it. Because we'd had a group conscience in Cocaine Anonymous when we first started it, end of 82, beginning of 83. And we decided to take the program from the beautiful book Alcoholics Anonymous, because it's already proven to work. So we took the program, and that was a worldwide group conscience. Cocaine Anonymous was only in Hollywood, but it was a worldwide group conscience, you know. And I was with Johnny, and he wrote out, "We admitted we were powerless over cocaine and all other mind-altering substances." I said, "You can't write that." "Yes, I can," he said. I said, "No, you can't. We took a group conscience." He said, "I don't care. I'm leaving it like that." I said, "Well, that ain't fair, because I'm in Alcoholics Anonymous and I don't drink, but I still do all the other shit." He said, "Yes, that's why you're bloody insane," he said. I said, "What do you mean?" He said, "We all know you ain't fooling anybody." I went, "What, you got to quit everything?" "Yes," he said, "everything." I went, "Blimey, holy shit, everything." So I remembered the last drugs I did, which was May 7th, so I made May 8th my clean and sober date, so I've been clean and sober coming up on May 8th, I'll be 28 years. But you see, like, that's free and clear of everything, you see, and I didn't know that I wasn't. See, so we have to be, and I can tell you, after 4 months of being in Alcoholics Anonymous, which I thought was sober, which I thought was 10 times, and my life did get better, but I was insane, homicidal and suicidal, completely nuts without what the book said was a sufficient substitute. And I see it every day. I see well-meaning people, you know, dabbling here and dabbling there and doing different jive. And we've got to realize that we've got to completely leave all that shit alone. And you know what? These young dudes that are coming around, some of them you know. It's easier for them to go out and cop a deal on any corner they want. It's easier to go and score than it is to go and buy a six-pack. And you know what? Some of us are not very well-meaning. They come in and we tell them to go out or take it out or don't identify. We don't want to hear that. This is Alcoholics Anonymous. Well, if you've got to say shit like that, try and refrain from yourself. And if you do have to say anything, why don't you just say, "Well, go and have a word with Mickey Bush. He might be able to help you with that shit." You know? Because we've got to encourage them young folk. They're dying. We see too many of those. Anybody know what I'm talking about? We were talking earlier about a convention I did in Loughlin. 1,200 people at this convention. They said, "We don't want to hear about no drugs yet." I said, "What?" 1,200 people in the room. How many people in the room just and only drank alcohol? 29. We counted them. 1, 2, 3. 29. I said, 29 out of 1,200 ain't very many, and if we all left, you'd be very fucking lonely. You know, I ain't no specialist. I'm a chemical gourmet, me. I mean, I do lots of other shit, but I learn here not to, and I haven't, and I don't, and I pass that on, and I encourage, and we do all that stuff, and it's paid off. In, oh man, you know, I'm going to just share something with you. My mum passed this year, and yet some of you know I used to talk about my mum a lot and tell good stories about her, tell good ones so I didn't have to repeat the bad ones. But she passed, and she died happy, and she died with a smile on her face. She died happy knowing that her kid was doing well in America. She used to sell me, because I used to go home to America every year, see my mum, and the first thing I'd do when I hit the shores, I'd go round my mum's house, and I'd knock her up, and I'd tell her, "Mum, I'm 28 years sober." She'd say, "So is the cat." She never gave me no pat on the back for not doing something I shouldn't have done anyway. She didn't understand me. She never understood me till the day she died. You know? She never thought it was any fun when I came home and puked on the cat. Have you ever puked on a cat? That's weird shit, I'll tell you. I mean, you can feel it coming. You can feel it coming because you've done it a million times before. And you swallow it back down. And all of a sudden you can feel it. It's going to be a gusher. Right on the cat. Cat gets up and runs off and puts a carrot on it. Where does that come from? Carrot and corn. Where does that come from, that carrot and corn? Every time I puked, I can promise you, I never once sat down and ate a diced carrot. But every time I puked, there the bastard was. Carrot and corn. My mum never used to laugh about that. She loved me till the day she died, but she didn't understand me like you folk. My mum didn't understand me till the day she died, and you guys, the very first day I got here, you knew exactly what was wrong with me and what to do about it, and you loved me, and you said, "Keep coming back, we love you." Wow, been a long time since anybody had said that. You know, when my mum died, part of her possessions was the flag. The American flag, Stars and Stripes. She had it on her mantelpiece in a triangular glass-fronted case with a brass plaque on it. It was her pride of possessions. In her little house, all her friends used to come over and they used to drink their tea and tell lies. She'd say, "You'll have to send me some more CDs, Mick. She'll have to tell me what you're doing, because all the old girls down the club want to know what you're doing. They keep asking me, 'How's your Mickey in America, Mary? How's Mickey doing in America, Mary?'" You know, and her chest would go out, and she'd be proud. And she'd share with her friends. See, I've been many places. I got invited. I've been to the White House a couple of times, and I've been on the Capitol building, and I got a lot of lovely things have happened, or a direct result of being a small part of this great hall. One time they took me up to the top of the Capitol building, the dome there, and they flew the American flag, the Stars and Stripes. And then they took it down and they folded it in that special way that they fold it in that triangular over the, like I saw them do at the president's funeral that time. They put it in that triangular shape. They sent it to my mum. And on the brass plaque it said, "This flag flew over America to celebrate Mickey Bush's birthday." She loved that. She loved that, and that was in her private place, in her house. So, how does that happen? How does a guy like me come out of nutwards for the criminally insane? There's nothing but trouble and grief to everything I've ever touched. Give an old lady a smile on her face as she passes into the twilight of her years, huh? How does that happen? It happens right here is how it happens. Right here in Alcoholics Anonymous. It happens right here. Her friends never used to say to her, "How's your Mickey doing in America, Mary?" They used to say, "They're going to let your Mickey out of the nut ward for Christmas this year, Mary." And she would cry and she would hurt, see, because she loved me. And if you don't think that that's important, stick around. Get some of those big fat feelings that we start feeling when we get clean and sober, and the pride and the decency and the love that we share. I love that. I love being a small part of this great whole. It's by far the most important thing I do on a daily basis. You know, if you were to say to me, "Here's $1,000, Mick, tell me the last 2 days in a row that you didn't go to a meeting," I wouldn't be able to take your money. I can't remember the last 2 days in a row that I didn't go to a meeting. I love going to meetings. I love being a small part of this great whole. What edition of book is this? Third edition. My daughter, my 16-year-old daughter, I introduced her to Alateen. I got a text from her yesterday. She's been to her Alateen meeting this week. She's got stuff that she's going to have to go through. You know, she's been cloned somewhat by a dysfunctional mum. I'm going to have to be there for her. What a gift. What a gift. What a gift to be able to be there so that she doesn't have to suffer in the same way. My little grandchild is going to come out. How do you say things like that? How do you do this? It's beyond what I know how to say. I don't know how to describe to you. It's beyond. My telephone number is 310-617-7878. 310-617-7878. I give you that because I love hearing from you. I love hearing from you. I love being able to be available to you. I'm not broke, busted, disgusted, and not to be trusted today. I'm very well healed financially and materially. But you know what? Nothing compares to the greatest asset I have, which was that loving God you taught me about. I never brought that in here with me, folks. When I came here, you guys, I guess you were well-meaning, but you said, "Let go and let God." I said, "What?" You said, "Turn it over to God." I said, "What?" You said, "Pray to God." I said, "Pray to God? Are you nuts? If I pray to him, he'll know where I am." I've been ducking God for years, me. Why would I want to pray to going that was going to strike me blind for playing with the old ding-a-ling, for Christ's sake? Did you hear that? They told me, "Don't you play with that, don't you touch that, I'll strike you blind." Well, you know, you tell an Alkie not to do something and he'll do it, won't he? So I did. When I found out how good it felt, I thought, well, I'll risk one eye. But I didn't want to have nothing to do with that no God crap that you all talked about. You know, I'd long ago abandoned that. This disease had gotten me to abandon that. But you know what? It nearly run me out of it. Because in the second step, the automatic assumption that a power greater than self is God, Jesus, Buddha, Allah, Muhammad, or any other noun is like the folklore that has become quite damaging to some of us. It doesn't say even higher power. It says a power greater than self. And here it is, folks. Here it is. Here's the power greater than self. In the big, big book, the Bible, and I have no problem with the Bible, B-I-B-L-E, being informed before leaving Earth. You know. In the big, big, big book, it said, when any two are gathered in my name, there I will be in your midst. I went, whoa, that's what we do in AA. Two Alkies come together for the purpose of recovery. God comes in our midst and produces a power greater than either of us. So it's produced by us, but it's greater than us, and we can absolutely depend upon it to not have to drink today. And whoa, that is great. Me plus you was a power greater than me. You plus us is a power greater than you. Together we could do what I couldn't do alone. I couldn't stay sober. You couldn't stay sober. But together we can stay sober. Here was the power. That's why God and the power are different. You see, I asked for help and he sent me to you. Because here was the power he provided for our kids to not have to drink today. But wow. And there must be a power here, mustn't there? Look, there must be a power in rooms like this all over the world where alcoholics come together to do together what they couldn't do apart. Alcoholics like this. Look, I don't know how many folks are in the room tonight, perhaps 200 or more. But there must be a power in here, mustn't there? There must be a power in here to enable 200 plus alkies to not be drinking on a Saturday night in Visalia listening to Mickey Bush. There must be, mustn't there? Because if there weren't, and we really do suffer from a disease that we're powerless over, powerless, that, you know, has got me by the short ones and just pulls me in and takes away my ability to say no so that then I have to say yes so that when I do say yes, I think I chose to or wanted to but didn't, and I didn't know that this disease makes me do what I already don't want to do. And I can't not do it just because I don't want to. I've got to not want to do it, then do these steps and this work so that I don't do what I already don't want to do. And if I ain't doing these steps and this work or ain't done these steps and this work, I will do what I don't want to do because the disease I got that I'm powerless over will make me do what I don't want to do. Do you think I knew that shit when I got here? Never had a clue. Now, if we don't have a power in rooms like this that we can take out there to combat the power of this fatal disease we're under, we're screwed. Because if we really do suffer from a disease that's cunning, baffling and powerful, and I haven't got an equal and opposite power, and I go out there and it makes me do what I don't want to do, when I leave here I'll have to go and get drunk. Now I don't know Visalia very well, but I got a feeling it ain't ready for 200 drunks to go out and get shit-faced tonight. I don't walk around powerless and all that. My book tells me we got power. New power has flowed in. We've been given the power to help the next guy, praying only for knowledge of his will with me. And the power, power, power. You see? I don't go walking around here denying the power that's in my life. Why would I do that? Look at the magic that we have in here. Look at the language of the heart. I've heard some laughter in here tonight. You know, if you're wondering whether you is or whether you isn't a real alcoholic or not, I'll give you a clue. You better not have laughed in here tonight. Because if you've laughed in here tonight, you may have caught this disease. Because they say, if you're laughing, you're relating. And if you're relating to a sick bastard like me, there ain't no doubt about you, pal. I tell you that. I don't get through to no well people. Well people don't laugh at my shit. And in the beautiful book it says he can choose whatever concept of God he likes, provided it makes sense to him. Now you check out how many times his book is conditional. The book that says of itself, our book is meant to be suggestive only. May I bloody well meant to be suggestive, but it ain't. It's got clear-cut, precise instructions, directions and rules to follow. He can choose any concept of God he likes, provided it makes sense to him. So get something that makes sense to you and hang on to it. It ain't got to make sense to me or anybody else, but as long as it makes sense to you, it's okay with us. Because we don't give a shit. We don't care. We don't care what it is. We don't care what you call it. Call it God, Jesus, Buddha, Allah, Muhammad, the Shiganovich, if you want. Nobody cares. You know, but find something for yourself that makes sense to you. Because no matter what it is, it's got something in common with everybody else's. See, all the gods, no matter what kind of god you got, has got something in common with everybody else's god. Look, if there's 200 plus gods in this room tonight, they've all got at least one thing in common with everybody else's god, haven't they? Look, what have all the gods got in common with each other? All the gods send their alkies here. Don't they? All the gods send their alkies here. Because here's the power they provided for an alky to not have to drink. Today. Namaste.